Being a mixed-race child in South Africa during the apartheid era might seem an unlikely starting point for a career in comedy, but that hasn't stopped 29-year-old Trevor Noah. His hilarious show called Born a Crime is now playing at 45 Bleecker Street and running until June 29th, and I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Good day. How are you?
I'm okay. Your father was Swiss. Your mother was Xhosa.
Yes.
Under apartheid, wasn't fraternization between the races forbidden?
It was very forbidden. It was the epitome of forbidden in the country. There was almost nothing worse you could do other than directly oppose the government, like Nelson Mandela did. So my parents were literally breaking the law by conceiving me, which is I guess where I got the title Born a Crime.
Were they able to live together?
No, we could never live together. We couldn't live together. We couldn't be seen together. You know, it was one of those situations where, as a child, I had no clue that this was happening around me. My parents were very good at, making it seem like this was very normal. And so I lived in a world where I would see my father maybe once a week, twice a week sometimes. And other than that, I lived with my mother. Out in Soweto, which was the black community in South Africa, and or the largest black community, and that's basically where we lived.
Well, as I find it's hard to say sometimes, Xhosa is that click language.
Yes.
Is it as difficult to speak as it feels for me?
It is. It's very difficult. It's based around three clicks. So you've got the C click, which is that sound, and then you've got the X, which is technically the Xhosa. It's on the side of your mouth. And then the Q is the, like, Kunu, that's where Mandela's from, so.
And did you speak it when you were growing up?
No, I didn't. You know what's funny is, I guess because there was no end in sight to apartheid, my mother always insisted I learn English. Many parents did. You know, it was the one leg up you would have in a community where you were a second-rate citizen. So if you could speak English, immediately you had some sort of advantage.
But in the race classifications, wasn't colored, which is mixed race,
yes,
higher than Bantu, which was pure African?
That is correct. I was technically superior to my mother, which never stopped her from administering spankings.
But it meant you went to different schools, didn't it?
No, you know what was really lucky for me is I was a cusp baby. I was born at a time when the first schools I went to didn't really matter. I was raised at home. My mom just gave me books, and I would learn in churches and so on. And by the time I could go into schools, it was just as apartheid had officially ended. But more importantly, as the country had really changed over, you know, in 1994, when we achieved democracy, when Nelson Mandela became president, I was then moving into a proper school system. And this was when the first group of integrated children got into schools.
F.W. de Klerk, the last of the leaders of the apartheid government, won a Nobel Prize because of that. Do you think he should have gotten a Nobel Prize?
I genuinely think he deserved it. You know, doing what he did.
Did he have any choice by then?
I think he did have a choice. You know, you look at dictators or oppressive governments or regimes around the world. Many of them don't let go until they are ousted forcefully.
As we're seeing in Syria,
exactly.
Right now.
You look at Syria, you look at Libya, you look at Egypt. Look at all of these countries. And de Klerk could have stayed on. He could have fought. He could have turned it into a civil war. And I think kudos to him. He received death threats for what he did, but he. You know, he ended the thing. Some will say he knew it had to end, but still, in doing that, knowing that it's the right time or knowing that it's the time is better than not knowing at all.
How had your parents met?
My parents met in an underground movement. There were a group of people. There were many groups of people who just didn't abide by the laws of the apartheid government.
Well, was the risk equal for both of them?
No. The risk was greater for my mother. She was arrested on many occasions. She was fined by the police, but still, she did it. I always asked her why she did it, and she would always say to me, she said, because I said, if you say I cannot have a white man, then I will go out and I will have myself a white man.
Would your mother have been punished for spending time with you?
No. Funny enough, she couldn't be seen to be my mother in public. That was the interesting thing. So what she would do is she would just act like she was my domestic caregiver. She would act like she was my maid of sorts and walk around with me in the streets, acting like she was looking after me for my mother.
It's almost surreal, isn't it?
It is. It genuinely is.
Couldn't you have gone to live in Switzerland?
We could have, but that's another thing I asked. I won't lie. I genuinely said, why on earth did we not just go to Switzerland? And my mom said, because this is my country and there was no way I was going to leave.
Well, how common was it to be of mixed race at that time?
Were you
an outsider?
Yeah, definitely. It was not common. It's still not common. It's still very noticeable in South Africa, because the distinction between, we have colored in South Africa, which some might deem mixed race, but the truth is colored people were originally a whole generation of people that were derived from slave owners having children with their slaves, and then they would force them to go live in the same areas, and they would then populate amongst themselves, and it became a culture unto itself.
And then it led to some really crazy things. As I remember, two children in the same family, one very light-skinned, deemed white.
Yes.
The other child would be deemed colored or Bantu.
That's correct. There was the very infamous pencil test, which I would have failed. In which, if they weren't certain of a child's race, in terms of if they weren't certain if you were white or if you were mixed, then they would place a pencil in your hair, and if the pencil fell out of your hair, then you were allowed to be considered white. If the pencil stayed in your hair, then you were considered black.
Was being funny a defense for you?
Not so much a defense as a, I guess, a method of earning acceptance. You know, they always say a laughing jury is not a hanging jury. And so that was something I always learned, is if you make people smile. I think I learned it from my grandfather. My grandfather was a very, very crazy man by the name of Temperance Noah. And he was a boisterous black man, very gruff voice. And he was just crazy. He was crazy in my eyes. And I'll never forget one day, we were in the city, and there was a white policeman on a horse, riding a horse, and he looked over at my grandfather, and my grandfather shouted out at him, which you shouldn't even speak to these people. And my grandfather shouted out at him, and he said, "Master, did you know that your president will kiss a horse, but he won't kiss my sister?" And I just thought, we are going to get beaten. What on earth is he doing? And that man laughed. Because that week the president was on the news kissing a horse, you know, there was on the front pages. And so my grandfather just found it funny. He said, you ready kiss a horse before you kiss a black woman?
He picked the right cop, obviously.
He did, definitely.
So how did you become a comedian? Is it true that stand-up was forbidden under apartheid?
Yes, it was, yes.
Apolitical comics?
If you were a white comedian, you could tell jokes, you could do your thing. If you were a black person, speaking in public and gathering a group of people to have what would be known as public speaking would be illegal. This was something you couldn't do in the country, and so there were no black comedians. And then there was one in particular, Peter Dirk Ace, who was a very famous white South African satirist who challenged the government, and he was arrested on many occasions as a white man because he spoke out about what was happening, and he was arrested for this many, many times.
You've said that you came to this country to be black.
I did. That was always my dream. Because I'll never forget growing up. That was the one thing I was always, every time I would meet an American, they would always tell me how in America I would be black. That was the one thing they always said to me. They said, "Oh, Trevor, you know, if you come out to America, they'll call you black. Yeah, we don't, you know, mixed is black out there." And I thought, really, this was just, you know, this was the promised land for me. I always wanted black. I always wanted, you know, my birth certificate remains blank till this day. They never filled in my race. They never wrote my father's name. Never even wrote the country I was from. They said I was from Swaziland because they could not justify my lightness from South Africa. So America was always that dreamland for me.
Well, and now we have a mixed-race president who's
yes.
black.
Yes, yes, you see? So when I saw Barack Obama, I said to my friends, I said, as you can see, Exhibit A, there it is. You work hard enough and you will be considered black. Because I remember when President Obama was running for president, they used to refer to him as the mixed candidate. It was a very, it was something that was all over the, they always said a mixed candidate, mixed candidate.
Mixed race candidate.
Yes, mixed we race candidate. Mix. Oh, yes, yes, mixed race candidate. And then as soon as he became president, they said America's first black president.
My guess is Trevor Noah, who's a one-man show called Born a Crime, is now playing at the 45 Bleecker Street Theater. It's running until June 29th. It's obvious that you do voices well, and you do a whole bunch of voices in the show. For example, you say that Nelson Mandela's life was determined by his voice.
I truly believe it was. I think, you know, when you look at the history of the ANC, the ruling party in South Africa, there was a reason they put Nelson Mandela up as the face of the organization, as the leader, because they
not
knew
just that he's brilliant.
He had a charisma. Oh, there were many, many brilliant men in that organization, many brilliant men. But he had one extra attribute, and that was his charisma. He's a charming man. They always said Nelson Mandela would never forget you if he met you. He would meet you. He would remember things about you. He would, whether you were a doorman at a hotel or a head of state, he just had that thing. And I think that voice of his, it's so epic. Everybody listens to it. Everybody knows what, when he speaks, everything he says is just so powerful. Like one of his most famous and simple phrases was just when you're speaking about apartheid. And he said, never again. And it was just, that's it. I mean, that sums it all up. It's just, you know.
Do you do a lot of impressions?
I do. I guess I learned to mimic people in life because of being from a mixed family. In my own family, there's so many different accents. My father's Swiss-German, you know, the family, Xhosa. I have friends from different cultures. So I always had to learn how to change my voice so people would understand me.
You do a great imitation of Mandela drunk at his 91st birthday party making jokes with Bill Clinton.
Yes. Well, I guess less of an impression and more of an artistic impression because that was the whole idea of the thing is you've never seen – Nelson Mandela is truly – he's a saint in South Africa. He's at that level, you know. Some people don't even see him as a man, which he is, and he's never claimed he's anything but – And then I did that. I thought it would be fantastic just to see him in this world, just running around, you know, shouting at guys like Bill Clinton at a birthday party, just, you know, saying to him, hey, Bill, welcome to my party, welcome. Let me tell you a joke, Bill. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. That was a good one, Bill. That was a good one.
You also had to learn to speak German because your father spoke German.
Well, not had to. No. I've started learning it. It's part of you. It's great to learn languages. My dream is to do my stand up in German as well. I have about 10 minutes, 15 minutes so far of German comedy material, and I enjoy it. You know, it's part of me.
When do you first see stand up? Because you say that it was banned at least for anyone who wasn't white.
The first time I saw stand-up in South Africa was around 2000. Yes, around 2000, 2001. I was just finishing school, and I remember seeing this stand-up comedy. I didn't even know what it was, just this comedy thing that was being done
by
a few guys. No, I didn't even see it in the theater. I just saw posters of it. I didn't know what it was. And then the first time I saw it live myself, I think was many years later, maybe 3 or 4 years later. And still, I just didn't understand how people were doing it.
And nobody was doing it on television?
No. That was foreign. That was a foreign concept.
Even after the fall of apartheid?
No, that was a foreign concept. There was one TV show called the Pure Monati Show that was striving towards that. But in terms of stand-up, it was still a very foreign thing. We didn't understand what the stand-up element was. They were doing sketches, which we understood. It was just, you know, it's comedic sketches.
And were the sitcoms?
Sitcoms. We've had American sitcoms from the beginning. We've been watching everything from Different Strokes to All in the Family. Those were on South African television for many years.
How old were you when you tried your hand at stand-up for the first time?
I was 23 years old.
And how did it go?
It was fantastic. It was amazing. I was in a comedy club, and not even a club, it was a bar. We don't have comedy clubs in South Africa. I think we just got one recently. And there were just a bunch of guys telling jokes in a corner, and I joined in, and I've never looked back.
Well, it's probably better when you have an audience that's mostly drunk. They laugh harder.
That's true, actually.
Is it fair to say that your style of stand-up is somewhat different from what Americans are used to?
Yes, to a certain extent.
More storytelling than one-liners.
Yes, more storytelling. Not as jokey. I'm not in a hurry to tell you a joke, if that makes sense. I aim for the show. I want you to have a good time at the show. You know, maybe we learn something together and explore the funny side of things, as opposed to really making it all about jokes.
Do you do a different act in South Africa?
I do have different acts in every country. I've got a different show in the UK and a different show in Australia and a different show in South Africa and now in America.
But is that why DVDs of your previous shows aren't available here? Because you think Americans won't understand them?
Yeah, it's not that Americans won't understand, but for the most part, a lot of the stuff I do is very South African. I enjoy doing that because we haven't had our stand-up. And because we have so much access to American stand-up, I've always said, then there's no need for me to almost give them, give our people something that they already have, but rather let's celebrate our thing.
Well, one of the things that comes to most Americans' minds when South Africa is mentioned is the epidemic of HIV/AIDS. That isn't a very, very good material for a comedian, is it? Can you talk about it back home?
Oh, yeah, I do. And you know what's funny? I realized the other day, in every single show, I have a joke about AIDS. Every single show, somewhere along the line. HIV/AIDS, I have, because I think the stigma attached to it is part of the biggest problem that prevents people from dealing with it. And so once you bring it out into the world, once you make it something that isn't just a boogeyman of diseases, then you can deal with it. You can work with it easier.
You've also done your act in other parts of Africa.
Yes.
Africa is interesting from what I understand in that it can be very, on social issues, it can be very conservative.
Definitely.
Affect the kind of comedy you can do?
Definitely. It really does. It really does. In certain countries, I mean, like for instance, I always get invited to Zimbabwe to perform, but I explain to them very, very honestly that I couldn't because I wouldn't be able to not
say
anything.
Robert Mugabe.
Yes,
wow.
Exactly. How do you not comment on him? How do you, you know? And people say, oh, just don't say anything about him. But then I say, well, then what's the point of me coming there? And so there's some countries in Africa where there's many countries where you can come in and make jokes. But as soon as you delve into the world of social issues, then you won't be so quick to be welcomed.
Hmm. Well, you have lots of comments about America. And don't you have a Showtime special coming up on July 6th?
That's correct.
And it's called Trevor Noah, African-American.
African-American, yes.
Well, are you American these days? Don't you live mostly in South Africa? You did live a year in L.A., didn't you?
Yes, yes. That's actually when I shot the special, was when I was out here. I was living in L.A. for about a year and a half. I was on the road every single week doing a show in at least 40 states I've been to.
Well, you one of the African routines is about a country that had just gotten escalators.
Yes, yes, yes. Zambia. Many countries are just getting escalators in Africa. It's a fantastic thing to see, and it's just a fun world to be a part of. You know, it's amazing.
And what
to
kinds
see.
Of jokes can you make about escalators?
Oh,
which are not called escalators in the rest of the world, are they?
No, they are. They are. Oh. Escalators stay escalators. It's elevators that change. Mm-hmm. We just say lift.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But you'd be surprised. I guess it's
they
the
have
story
iPhones,
around
but
the
no escalators.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I say it's really just a different world that I try and joke about. It really is.
Well, you will be doing this show at 45 Bleecker Street until June 29th.
Yes, had the privilege of extending, which has been fantastic. Extended it for a further month, and it's going well, getting fantastic crowds coming in.
And then do you go to other American cities? You go back home?
No, go back home for 7 days. Then I head out to Montreal, and then after that, head out to Edinburgh. And then
Do a different routine in Scotland that you do in London?
I do. Yes, yes. I love tapping into the area that I'm in. It's a wonderful privilege to have, and I try and do it as much as possible.
So if you can't make it to 45 Bleecker Street and see Trevor Noah doing his show called Born a Crime, If you have Showtime, you can always check them out on July 6th.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you so much for being
on
our show.
Thank you very much for having me.